Indiana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. In the studio, Focus 580 host David Inge. Good morning, David.
Hi, Dave.
What do you have in hand today for us?
We got books. We got lots and lots of books. This is something on the program that we like to do occasionally. It's always fun for us. We have two guests with us in the studio. They've been here before many times, Philip Graham and Tanya Leotsakis. And what they do is they come in and they bring big armloads of new books, things that they have been reading and that they have enjoyed and that they would like to recommend. And I know that I have gotten a lot of good recommendations over the years. I've read some of the books that they have brought in and enjoyed them, and I hope people who are listening have had that same experience. So we'll do that again. We'll have both hours, so we'll have plenty of time, and I know that you will have a good time. And also, of course, people who are listening, if you would like to recommend a book, you can do that too. That's great. Now, there's something else that's going on here this morning. It's a little thing that some time ago we started doing it, and we started calling it Crazy Dave and Jack's Big Book Giveaway. With me in the studio here is the aforementioned Crazy Jack, and we've sort of expanded this over time. How do we do it?
Volume.
That's it. Here's the deal, ladies and gentlemen. We'd like you to support the station, and as our way of saying thanks, if people will call in with a pledge, we will send you a book. So, Mr. Brighton,
yes.
How does that work?
It works very easily. If you call the pledge line, 217-244-9455, make a basic membership pledge, $40, $25 for students and senior citizens, and we will send you a book, fiction or nonfiction. We have two categories from which you can pick. We have so many darn books that we just can't list the titles, but they're all new, hardcover, you know, grade A, we're talking primo quality books. That some of them have actually probably been featured on Focus 580, but we just can't list the titles, like I say. So all you have to do is make a pledge at $40, the basic membership level. Become a friend of WILL. If you've never become a friend of WILL in the past, we need your support. You know that. You've heard us say this. This is your chance to do that and get a bonus of a book, basically. Mm-hmm. 217-244-9455 between 10 and noon today is your opportunity to get in on Crazy Dave and Jack's big book giveaway. Support WILL and just do it. And we're looking for 40 pledges by noon. So, you know, we're looking for the first one right now, 217-244-9455.
And I suppose we really should include Harriet and Martha, our other producers in the deal. We've known Harriet long enough so that we know that she's crazy. Martha, we're not quite so sure.
No, she's crazy too. I'm telling
you. She seems pretty together.
Anybody who would take over the job of producing Focus 580, by definition, is crazy.
Well, when you put it like that, yeah. Okay, folks. Well, we hope to hear from lots of people this morning who make pledges. And if you want to call in on the program, too, that's great. The numbers are the same as always, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455, if you would like to recommend a book. Well, it's nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
I don't know how long it's been, actually.
For me, it's been a very long time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Because I've been back in school, and so I missed the last show. Yeah.
Well,
you.
It's been
very,
6 months
very nice
for me.
To have you here. We appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Well, now, you both have brought books. We have them stacked in front of you.
Yes.
Who would like to go first?
I think we're going to let Philip go first today because he always is so gentlemanly.
Oh, okay.
Let
well,
me go
you.
First.
Okay. I'm actually going to recommend the children's book, which I haven't done in a while. This is a book, actually a series of books. There are two so far, so I guess that constitutes a series, a budding series.
Yeah.
It's the Molly Moon series, and it's by a writer named Georgia Bing, B-Y-N-G. And maybe if you've been Harry Pottered out, you know, this is a book that you might like. I think not in the sense that I think this is really a book that either children would like or adults would like to read to their children, you know. Mm-hmm. And my daughter loves this book. She just was so insistent that I would recommend these two books because she said they're my favorite books ever. And that, I thought, was kind of surprising because she and I are also big, big fans of Mark Quigley's The Akiko series. I don't know if you know those.
It's I don't know those.
A little girl who is goes on in the adventures with aliens that take her, you know, all around, and they're very, very funny. They're originally a series of comic books, then they were made into young children's books, and so both my wife and I love to read to our children at night. We take, you know, turns. First, Alma reads, and then I read. And lately, we've been doing these Georgia Bing Molly Moon books, and Molly Moon is an orphan who has been very, very downtrodden until she comes upon a book in a library about hypnotism, and she learns how to hypnotize.
Yeah, she sure does.
Yes. And and she hypnotizes just about everybody she comes in contact with.
Imagine the power.
Oh, yes. And she gets really very good at it until she starts doing things that she really shouldn't do. She's abusing this power. And so the first book really is about how she kind of learns how to come back to earth with this power and how to use it properly. And in fact, she stops using it for a while. But then the second book, the first book was called Molly Moon's Incredible Book of Hypnotism. The second one, which I'm in the middle of right now with my daughter, is Molly Moon Stops the World. And in this one, Molly Moon has to basically save the world with her hypnotic gifts. And I don't know if she does or not because we're only halfway through. I suspect
I've
she will.
I've only read the first one, so
yeah.
I don't know.
This is better, I think. The second one is better than the first.
The plot is better,
I think. It's a little more interesting. Though I must say that one of the things that was really enjoyable about the first book and something that very, very much impressed my daughter, Hannah, was how often we were surprised by things, you know. When people are hypnotizing people who are hypnotizing people, sometimes you're not quite sure if you're in a world that's been suggested or a world that's actually real.
If you've been hypnotized.
Yeah. And so there were quite some surprises that my daughter adored. But we're enjoying the second book a little more. Very recommend. If you want a really interesting book to read to your children, if you still have children out there who like to, you know, sit with you, you know, and get a book, a chapter read to them before they go off to bed, this is just right. Now, Hannah is 9, and this is a perfect age for that, mm-hmm. that age child.
That's a yeah. really nice thing. I don't know how many parents do.
Everybody should
read to their kids, but it's a wonderful thing.
I know
thing.
A lot of parents who read to their kids. We always read. We read novels and I know. I mean, most of the people that I'm associated with mm-hmm. do read to their kids, and I think there's sort of this myth that kids aren't being read to, and test scores and all this stuff, and kids don't like to read. But that really has not been my experience, even just from the bookstore. I mean, obviously, the people I'm around are people who are coming
who are
in
reading.
Yeah. And also, you're sharing a narrative with a child over a long period of time. Yeah. You know, my wife reads a chapter from a different book to Hannah.
Yes.
And then I take over and I read a chapter from another book.
So yes.
She makes out like a bandit. She gets about a half an hour or more every night
right.
before she goes to bed. But the other thing I like about it is there's my daughter, and she's had two narratives read to her of a continuing narrative, and then she goes to sleep and gets to dream. Mm-hmm. And I like to think that with two books and the events of two books fresh in her mind as she goes off to sleep,
that's
giving her some interesting dreams.
Yeah. And you share an experience.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful experience.
The only problem is that she might grow up to be a writer.
<Uh-oh>. Well, I can warn her
against
that.
If you start them out like that.
No, I'll warn her against that.
You know, things like that can happen. All right, so again, the name and the...
Georgia Bing. Her last name is B-Y-N-G, Molly Moon. Molly Moon's Incredible Book of Hypnotism is the first book in the series, and the second one is Molly Moon Stops the World, which I'm only halfway through but can already recommend safely, I think.
And we will, for people who have internet access, on our website, we'll have the titles and the authors of all the books that Philip Tanya mm-hmm. will recommend this morning. So that's you can go there and get them, and then if you don't have internet, we'll make sure that you can get the information.
Great.
Okay. Well, Tanya, now here she has a book. I know from just chatting with her for about 2 seconds before the program, she's very enthusiastic about this book. And she said, I could talk about this book for the whole show.
I could talk about this book for the whole show. And I think that I would need to in order to really communicate what's going on. This is a book called Kafka on the Shore. And it's by Haruki Murakami, who's pretty famous. He wrote the Wind-Up Bird Chronicle. And I've read a couple other novels by him, Norwegian Wood. And he's a Japanese writer, and they have been translated. And the thing I can say about these, the translation is seamless. That's what I always find with his books. People hesitate often to read translated books because, you know, they think you lose something and of course I don't speak Japanese, so I don't know if we have, in fact, lost something. But it's a great skill to be able to write in a way, not just to be able, like his translator is remarkable, but not just to be able to translate it, but to be able to write in a way in the first place, where you know that this incredible wild stuff that's going on in your language is going to be able to be translated into another one. Mm-hmm. That's a real That's a real talent.
Yeah. You know, could I just say,
yeah.
Haruki Murakami is a translator himself of American literature into Japanese. And so maybe part of the seamlessness is consultation with his translator.
Surely. Yeah. And, I mean, they're very different languages.
Yeah,
so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So this is a book, gosh, it's so hard to talk about it because, not just because I don't want to give things away, I don't even know if I could give anything away. Because it's so entrenched in magical realism, it's a hard thing to describe in speech, and you kind of have to see it and read it and experience it for yourself. But I'll tell you this. There are four, well, the book begins essentially with four separate stories, you know, in alternating chapters, and eventually becomes three, which becomes two, which by the end becomes one. And, I mean, that's... it's killing
me. You're getting Philip upset?
No, I know that. I bought the book last week, and he's one of my favorite writers.
Yeah, me too.
And I love the stuff he does structurally. But,
yeah. Don't say anymore.
Well, I can't say that, but I could leave the room. Do you want me to?
No, don't leave the room.
No, because I just love...
No, I know, I know,
Philip. Does an amazing thing with another one of his books, which...
Which one?
It's A Hard-Boiled Wonderland
and
the End
that.
Of the World.
Yeah.
And that, too, has a structure that it's part of the meaning of the book.
So, it really is part of the meaning of the book. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely the case with this. And also, you know, you begin to read it and you just have to let yourself accept that you're confused.
Yeah.
You just have to, you know, you have to begin it and alternate these chapters and go, this has nothing to do with that. And that has nothing to do with this. And I know, and you just have to have faith in Murakami that they have everything to do with one another.
Oh, I'm
and
so excited.
Oh, you should be
you
so
can't
excited.
Wait to read it.
Yeah, it's incredible. So here's what's going on. So you haven't started it at all?
No, I can't. I'll leave the room. I will.
Really?
Okay, yeah, because you should go.
I should say something about it, you know? I should say something concrete about it.
Philip's going to go in the soundproof booth now.
Okay, great.
And if he doesn't trip over his headphone cord. Okay, he goes. He's leaving the room. There's the door. Okay, the door's closed. All right.
Okay. Here are the main stories that you get from the beginning. In the beginning, there is a boy, a Japanese boy, lives in Japan, and he is 15 years old, and he's sort of... he's kind of like the Japanese Holden Caulfield, really, just sort of stereotypically. He hates his father and he wants to go away from home and see the world and whatever. You also come to understand that his mother left them, he and his father, when he was very young. And he remembers her voice but cannot remember her face. He also knows that he has an adopted sister. You know, he's the natural child, and then they adopted a sister. The mother, when she left, took the sister, the adopted sister, with her. And so his whole life he struggled to understand why she was the one who was wanted and he was not. So he's decided to run away from home. And, you know, he gets all his stuff together and he makes his way and has this little Holden Caulfield journey to another city, hundreds of miles away from his home. So that you have his story, and he's, you know, a runaway. The second story that comes about is, it takes place after World War II. So we've got time periods shifting around here like crazy, too. After World War II, some of these chapters are structured like interviews from military authorities to witnesses to a certain event that took place in Japan in 1946. And you can't figure out what in the world. I mean, this is a whole separate set of characters, a whole separate time period entirely. The third story you have going on is about an elderly, developmentally disabled gentleman named Nakata. And Nakata lives on a subsidy that his brother provided for him, that his brother helped to acquire for him from the government. And he is a very, very interesting character, and he can speak with cats. He can literally communicate with cats, and they can speak back with him. And who is this guy, and what the hell does he have to do with anything, and what's this World War II thing, and what about the kid? And you just go back and forth and back and forth, and they just seem to not be tied together at all. And it's just brilliant the way Murakami shows us that, in fact, this is all one story. And you sense that. You know that's going to happen because it doesn't make any sense any other way. You go, somehow this is connected, but I'll never be able to determine what it is until I'm way further into the book. And it goes on like that for some time, but it's exciting because it's really like reading four different books because you can't wait to get to the next chapter of the next story. So I'd just like to read a short passage with Nakata speaking to cats, and you can get kind of a feel for the way Murakami writes and also a feel for how special this character is. "It's all right, then, if Nakata calls you Kawamura?" He repeated the question to the striped brown cat, enunciating his words slowly, making it as easy to understand as he could. This particular cat said he thought he had run across Goma, the missing one-year-old tortoiseshell, in this vicinity. But from Nakata's point of view, he spoke very strangely. The feeling was mutual, for the cat seemed to be having its own problems following him. Their conversation was at cross purposes. "I don't mind at all. The tallest of heads." "Pardon me, but Nakata doesn't understand what you're saying. Forgive me, but I'm not so bright." "It's a tuna, to the very end." "Are you perhaps saying you'd like to eat tuna?" "No, the hands tied up before." Nakata never went into these conversations with cats expecting to be able to easily communicate everything. You have to anticipate a few problems when cats and humans try to speak to each other. And there was another factor to consider: Nakata's own basic problems with talking, not just with cats, but also with people. His easy conversation with Otsuka the previous week was more the exception than the rule, for invariably getting across even a simple message took a great deal of effort. On bad days, it was more like two people on the opposite shores of a canal yelling to each other on a windy day. And today was one of those days. He wasn't sure why, but striped brown cats were the hardest to get on the same wavelength with. With black cats, things mostly went well. Communicating with Siamese cats was the easiest of all, but unfortunately, there weren't too many stray Siamese wandering the streets, so the chance didn't present itself often. Siamese were mainly kept at home, well taken care of, and for some reason, striped brown cats made up the bulk of the strays. Even knowing what to expect, Nakata found Kawamura impossible to decipher. He enunciated his words poorly, and Nakata couldn't catch what each one meant, or the connection between them. Kind of like we can't catch the connection between all these various stories. Yeah. What the cat said came off sounding more like riddles than sentences. Still, Nakata was infinitely patient and had plenty of time on his hands. He repeated the same question over and over, having the cat repeat his responses. The two of them were seated on a boundary stone, marking a little park for children in a residential area. They'd been talking for nearly an hour, going round and round in circles. "Kawamura is just a name I'll call you. It doesn't mean anything. Nakata gives names to each cat, so it's easy to remember. It won't cause you any problems, I guarantee it. I'd just like to call you that, if you don't mind." In response, Kawamura kept muttering something incomprehensible, and seeing as how this wasn't likely to stop any time soon, Nakata interrupted, trying to move their talk along by showing Kawamura the photo of Goma once more. "Mr. Kawamura, this is Goma, the cat that Nakata is looking for, a one-year-old tortoiseshell cat. She's owned by the Kozumis of the Three-Comb neighborhood in Nagata, who lost track of her a while back. Mrs. Kozumi opened a window, and the cat leaped out and ran away. So, once more, I'd like to ask you, have you seen this cat?" Kawamura gazed at the photograph again and nodded. "If it's tuna, Kawamura tied up, try to find." "I'm sorry, but as I said a moment ago, Nakata is not very bright and can't understand very well what you're getting at. Would you mind repeating that?" "If it's tuna, Kawamura tries. Try to find and tied it up." "By tuna, you mean fish?" "Tries the tuna. Tie it, Kawamura." Nakata rubbed his closely cropped salt and pepper hair and puzzled this over. What could he possibly do to solve this tuna riddle and escape from the maze the conversation had become? No matter how much he put his mind to it, however, he was clueless. Puzzling things out logically, after all, wasn't exactly his forte. Totally blithe to it all, Kawamura lifted a rear leg and gave the spot just below his chin a good scratch. Just then, Nakata thought he heard a small laugh behind him. He turned and saw, seated on a low concrete wall next to a house, a lovely, slim Siamese looking at him with narrowed eyes. And he goes on to have this incredibly elaborate conversation with the Siamese cat. This is his job. He gets extra money by finding stray cats, by finding lost cats for people who have lost their pets. And I will also mention two more things about this book, and then I will stop so Philip can return. And that is that two of the characters involved, and I can't say anything more about it, but two of the characters involved in this story, just to entice you, are Johnny Walker, you know, like the whiskey.
Like the scotch, yeah.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Johnny Walker as a man. Mm-hmm. And Colonel Sanders. Does this sound like the craziest, wildest ride ever? But somehow it all makes this perfect kind of sense. And it's just, yeah.
Sounds good. All right. It's Kafka on the Shore,
right,
by Haruki Murakami. It's
right.
A Japanese writer. And it is out now. It's new. I know I have read a few reviews of it recently. In fact, I think it was just in the New York Times book review just this past Sunday.
Not surprising at all.
Of the book. So if that sounds enticing to you. To tell you the truth, I haven't actually read the review. I noticed that it was reviewed.
I think it must be one of his very best.
All right. And then that is brand new and it's out now. So if that sounds good to you, and Philip is back, so we won't say anything more.
I'm sure it was.
We don't want to spoil it for him.
And you read the perfect passage.
Yes.
We have here.
I'm so sorry. But
two guests.
It's okay.
They've both been on the program before. It's always a lot of fun when they're here. Philip Graham, who teaches English at the U of I and is a writer. Tanya Leotsakis works out at Pages for All Ages Bookstore. And for a while now, they've been coming in here every once in a while, and they bring books and talk about them. And I hope that you have profited, you have benefited by their recommendations. I know I have. If this
we have benefited as well from recommendations from callers.
So. Yeah. So people want to call and recommend a book. That's great. But we do want to remind you of something else here that is very, very important, and that is something like half of the money it takes to run this place has to come from listeners. We do get some money from the state. We do get some money from the federal government, but that money has declined precipitously over the past couple of years. In fact, we've really lost something like, you know, in the vicinity of $300,000 in tax-based support over the last 3 years.
Ouch.
Yeah. Tell me about it. And so the only thing that we can do if we want to continue, if we want to maintain the service, but we want to improve it by modernizing the equipment, providing new services like the stuff that we do on the web that Jack Brighton, my friend here, is responsible for. Folks, if you value the station, you must now come forward and help support it with your dollars. Simple as that. Now, if you're already a supporter, that's great. But we're trying to reach out particularly this week to people who are not. And we're hoping that we can hear by the end of the week from 300 new friends, people who have not supported the station before. And if you are among those group, that the people who listen but are not a supporter, and if you can call in this morning and make a pledge, that would be great. We would love it. 244-9455 is the number to call.
That's right. And we will give you a book if you call during Focus 580 until noon today if you specify fiction or nonfiction, the two categories we have to offer. These are the books that we get over the transom every day by the truckload, it seems, that we just can't keep. So we'd like to share them with you. And if you make a pledge at the $40 basic membership level, we will send you a new hardcover fiction or nonfiction book. You choose the category. And I'd also like to suggest, sort of following on what Jay was talking about earlier this morning, Jay and Dan were talking about gift memberships. And wouldn't it be great? You could give somebody a gift membership in the Friends of WILL, somebody who doesn't currently isn't a member of the station, and send them a book. So you can not only help support the station, give your friend a gift, but you can send them a book as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, consider that as well. 217-244-9455.
Can I ask a question? If you were a multiple personality, if you contributed a second time, would you qualify as a new contributor?
That's okay with me. Yeah. I'm agnostic about that.
I think we'd have to have a note from your doctor.
But I am Crazy Jack after all. Well,
some people could contribute many times, right?
I suppose so. Well, you know.
Do we want to talk to Kim?
I think we do. Kimberly Cronick is our outreach coordinator, and she does a whole lot of things in the community to sort of tie together what we're doing here at WILL with what's going on in our communities. And I hear the phone ringing out there. Kimberly, how's it going?
It's going very well. People love our Crazy Focus 580 book giveaway. For just a $40 pledge, you can pick, as they said, a hardcover fiction or nonfiction book. The number to call is 217-244-9455. Melanie's on the phone. John's on the phone. Heather's on the phone. It's going very well. I want to thank some folks already. Jan from Champaign. Thank you, Jan. Ben from Champaign and James from Goodland. Thank you all for pledging during Focus 580. You know, $40 is really not that much when you think about it. Say a dollar a week, a $52 pledge. What do you spend a dollar a week on? Probably coffee, maybe
more than
pop.
That. Yeah, sure.
Or you go to the vending machine. So really, it's not a lot of money when you think about a $52 pledge. It's just a dollar a week. And when you compare what you spend a dollar a week on, hey, I think that you'll realize that the programs on Focus 580, on AM 580 in general, the call-ins, the opportunity to interact with guests, it's all worth it, and we need your support. And we're particularly looking for new members. We want to have 40 calls by noon, so give us a call now, 217-244-9455, and take your choice of a fiction or nonfiction hardcover for your basic membership of just $40.
That's right. We want to send lots of books out the door. We really want you to have these books. We really care about your mind and improving your understanding and your enjoyment of everything. So books are one of those ways that we would like to share ideas with you. We're all about ideas on this show. This is something, you know, books contain ideas. So in that sense, I suppose they're very dangerous. But everything we do here contains ideas. So if you are into the idea of supporting that, we hope you'll give us a call right now, 217-244-9455, and get a book.
I never realized what dangerous work this was.
It's extremely dangerous. Yeah. And I also want to say, if you don't like ideas, do not make a pledge call. So if you don't support the, you know, people's knowledge and actually you don't want people to get new ideas, then this is not the place for you. You know, just stay up that up front. Okay.
In the interest of
full disclosure,
honest,
absolutely right. Yes. Okay. But if you think that what we do here is valuable, we need you to support it. So give us a pledge call, 217-244-9455.
And just to confuse people, I'll give you another number, and that's the number for the show, because if you are listening at home and you would like to recommend a book, you may. And the number, if you'd like to call in, same number as always, that's 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. No one will expect you to pledge. We would like it. If you would, it is not required. Well, we did Haruki Murakami and Philip left because he
not an
because
angel.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. I mean, you know, you don't want to hear it.
Well, I'm about to read it.
That's
so
right.
Right.
He's getting ready to read, but he doesn't want to know anything about it.
Particularly, he knows too my propensity for giving things.
Sometimes, yes. No, but you're getting very good at that. Okay. You're thinking about it.
I've got you in mind.
But Haruki Murakami, again, he is such a individual, marvelous, inventive writer that
absolutely
the surprises need to
they need to happen they do yeah. they do yeah. it's yeah. that's exactly what this book does yeah. is it unfolds
yeah. I'm so excited
yeah you should be Tanya, can't wait to talk to you about
Tanya
it
Tanya gets okay. very yeah, excited about the books and yeah. and then she wants to talk about them and when she starts telling the story and mm-hmm. Philip if you hear you're here you could just he starts to cringe. He does, you know, being a writer.
He just doesn't want me to spoil.
He just
anything.
Doesn't. That's right. He said, you know, don't give away too much. He wants to just give enough to, you know, put the bait out there to just snag somebody.
When I get a book, I don't even like to read the jacket copy for the same reason because you know.
Oh, you don't read the jacket.
Well, I try not to, but it's meant to make you excited about the book. But it also, it.
Sometimes it. I know what you're saying. Well, I always read the jacket though. That's amazing. You don't read the jacket
as a writer. I enter into a world of the fiction I'm trying to create without knowing what's often going to come next or
only
a vague sense of how this world is going to shape. And when I read a book, I very often like to have a similar
experience
as a reading of letting the work unfold. And if somebody's jacket copy has told me that somewhere around page 50 I can expect this,
I know.
Then I'm not getting the surprise that I know
that
every writer
expect.
Would like me to have or to have the engagement without some kind of
that you deserve
commercial guide because this is commercial copy.
Well, that's why it is. It's commercial copy and that's why you have to be. See, I would love to do that.
Yeah.
I would love to write copy Because I think there's sort of a skill in being able to tell, you know, without giving it away. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. But I have to read the jacket because I don't want an experience where I'm reading something that I think I might perhaps enjoy at some point and then get all the way through it and not, you know.
Yeah.
I have to know something.
Well, I'll peek, but I'll stop if it looks like it's getting, you know.
Yeah.
And Jack, I once actually my second book, I got a review. It was a wonderful review of my book. The problem was it was a word-for-word plagiarism of the jacket copy.
Oh, really?
Oh, had God. Read the book and just simply
and
repeated
just said,
what
I
it
see.
Said on the exactly word-for-word.
Oh,
and
that's too bad.
I thought I would complain, but I figured it was a really good review.
So you might as well.
Yeah, say what you want. Spell my name right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay. We have a couple of callers.
Okay.
Now, would you like to – should we do that?
No, let's callers.
Do
that.
Let's do the callers.
We'll go first to someone listening in northwestern Indiana on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, I just hopped into the car and heard that lovely reading from Casa on the Shore.
Yes. Kafka.
Kafka.
Yeah.
And I have a question about this book.
Okay.
I have a 9-year-old who has a fully adult reading ability, but of course, emotionally, she's a 9-year-old.
Right,
and
right.
It's hard to find appropriate books for her, and she's loved the Warrior series, so she enjoys books that bring cats to life. And I wondered whether the emotional content of this is such that it would work for...
That's a very good question. People ask me this a lot at work. You know, I have a child who's, you know, very precocious and very mature, and their reading level is very, very high. But content-wise, there's always a fear that there will be something that won't be appropriate. I would say that in this case, the problem is that you'd probably be okay with about 80% of it. Mm. But there's that 20%. That is fairly adult, that she may not even understand, but certainly would provoke questions. And there's some, I'm gonna say no, unfortunately. Let me think though, if I can come up with something else that's similar. That you say, what series did you say she liked where cats come to life?
The Warriors.
Has she read Time Cat? Does she usually read young adult novels, or does she read adult novels?
Generally young adult novels.
Right, right. Philip recommended a book before mine, which is...
A little earlier in the show. I don't know if you were listening.
Yeah.
I just got in the car.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Philip, could do it to mention it again.
It's a series of books. There are two in the series so far, the Molly Moon series. One is called Molly Moon's Incredible Book of Hypnotism. The other is Molly Moon Stops the World. The author is Georgia Bing, B-Y-N-G. And these are books that are, for anybody who likes like a Harry Potter book, would really enjoy these books. My daughter, who's 9, adores these books. And that's why I've been recommending them.
And they did devour. I've got 2 9-year-olds. Actually, they're twins, but only one of them likes cats.
Yeah.
But they did devour the Harry Potter books as soon as they came out.
I would say the Molly Moon series by Georgia Bing would be right up their alley.
You know what else? I have to say for all these fans of Harry Potter that are kind of moving on and that are getting a little older. There's a fantasy series by Philip Pullman called The Golden Compass. Mm-hmm. And I think the second one is, The Subtle Knife and The Amber Spyglass. It's a trilogy.
And the Golden
Compass is the first one, yes. And it is, talk about a writer. I mean, this guy is incredible.
Yeah.
And he really, for adults too, absolutely for adults too. We keep his books in both the young adult and the fantasy science fiction section, although it's certainly not science fiction, but
we'll try those.
There's a
lot that has been produced sort of in the genre, but not all of it is as good a writing as I'd like them to be reading.
I would venture to say that Philip Pullman, I mean, not I absolutely love Harry Potter. They're tons of fun. Tons of fun, and they are well written.
But Philip Pullman is a
very serious writer, and he's a bit of a genius, actually. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the best trilogies I've ever read, either as a child or an adult. So,
and the first of the trilogy is The Golden Compass.
The Golden Compass, right?
We'll I'll try those. I appreciate it. It's not that I, you know, feel a need to protect her from adults.
No, no.
It's just that, you know, those are emotional issues that don't engage her.
No, that's a fair concern. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the info.
All right.
Thank
very
you.
Good. Good luck with that. Thanks. Well, let's get, we've got a couple local people here now in Urbana to talk with. Let's do that. Line one first here in Urbana. Hello.
Good morning. I wanted to thank you for having recommended some time ago, She's Not There.
Oh, incredible.
By Jennifer Finney
Boylan.
Boylan, who used to be James Finney Boylan.
That's right, yeah.
And it was well written, interestingly written, and an interesting issue. And it's his story of being aware at age 3 that he was actually female.
Mm-hmm.
And his attempts to be a male but eventually giving up on that in a marriage with children.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued by one of his friends who is Richard Russo.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yeah. I think he wrote the, foreword for that book.
Yes. An epilogue or maybe just an epilogue. Anyway, so I happened to bump into one of his books, Empire Falls.
Oh, incredible.
And I
love Richard Russo.
He also did Nobody's Fool, which was turned into a movie with...
I did not read that, nor did I see.
Paul Newman is in it and plays an old grump who's Nobody's Fool. And I really enjoyed that movie. So I thought, oh, no, I'm going to try Empire Falls. And I just loved it. It was a real interesting page turner.
Yeah.
And we're reading She's Not There in our book group this month.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Next month in our book group, I've already started on that book. It's Cokie Roberts' Founding Mothers.
That has been very, very popular. I don't read a lot of nonfiction, but, that's a very interesting historical look at...
Well, and Cokie doesn't... she's not irreverent, but she's not... doesn't treat things as a straight academic historian. So when she's commenting on Benjamin Franklin having stayed away in Europe for years and years and years and leaving his poor wife to run the postal service, which he had founded. He had his private postal service and his business stuff, and then treating her like she's nothing, she comments on that.
Right.
So I'm enjoying reading it. It's the kind of thing you can pick up and read in short bursts, which is a useful thing to be able to do at times. And I also wanted to mention, with regard to the previous caller, when my kids were at the young adult reader stage, we ran across Anne McCaffrey's series.
Oh, yes. You know what? That's a great suggestion. Because that's right in it's adult novels, but it's... it's great for that age.
Well,
Dragons and,
Yeah, there's a young... A segment of the whole series it's about the planet Pern.
Yeah.
But instead of having cats for pets, people have fire dragons and big dragons that they can communicate with mentally. But it's a colony that has, you figure out eventually that it's a colony from Earth, and it's years and years later, and they've lost track of the history that they are a colony from Earth. So it's just a very interesting premise and very strong child characters. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Should we go on? We got one more?
Okay.
All right. Let's go to another Urbana caller here, line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to throw in my 2 cents worth for books that I've enjoyed recently.
Thank you.
And thanks to... Focus 580 and the afternoon magazine, I can heartily recommend the book on Krakatoa by Winchester, Sea of Glory by Philbrick, His Excellency, Every American Should Read That by Joseph Ellis.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
That's biography of
George Washington. Yeah.
Yes. You really get the man and not the phony mythology foisted upon us by that hustler, Parson Weems. And
he didn't chop down the cherry tree?
No.
Nor did he throw a silver dollar across the
road. No,
what about the wooden teeth?
Crushed.
Oh,
I'm crushed.
It's amazing how much of those lies have permeated society, and we don't get the real man that... Ellis shows us. Mm-hmm. I'm also a fan of science fiction, and I've recently started a trilogy which is not even completed yet by an author named Thomas Harlan, and he also creates video games. Hmm. He's got a real different take on the way he presents the universe he has created, which is not this one. It's a different type of universe where the Mexica Empire first ruled planet Earth and moved into space.
How do you spell his last name? Harlan, H-A-R-L-A-N?
Yes.
And what's the book?
Well, the most recent one of his most recent series is called House of Reeds, and it was on the new bookshelf at the Urbana Library. Mm-hmm. The first book was The Wasteland of Flint, but he has written other books before those. And
yeah, he's ringing a bell, but I can't bring him up for some reason.
Another very different take on science fiction is Catherine Ossaro, who combines what I would call whiz-bang, shoot-'em-up science fiction with red-hot romance.
And how do you spell her last name?
A-S-R-O. Ossaro. Uh-huh. Okay. Whoops, my wife corrects me. A-S-A-R-O.
Kind of like it sounds.
Yeah.
Great.
And that's something I never expected, but those are entertaining. Who's the other guy we like? Charles Sheffield. Charles Sheffield is a real NASA scientist who's writing science fiction. And we read his Heritage Universe series.
And does all the science hold up?
He's pretty sharp in that he moves into areas that have yet to be fully defined, which is what the science fiction author, that's where the science fiction author finds their freedom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What bothers me is that you will see pop science fiction, what you might call it, either in movies or television, and they're obviously making some claims or doing something that is outside what everyone knows from, you know, like their high school physics class or something like that.
Yeah.
They're all entertaining in their own ways, and I got to thank Celeste Quinn, especially for Sea of Glory by Philbrick. It's a true story. It's a bit of American history that is really significant, but was forgotten. And I heard the original interview that she did with Mr. Philbrick. I heard the repeat of it, and I read the book, and all of it's fabulous.
No, that's good.
Great.
Yep. This is the guy who wrote a book, an earlier book, that was, a true story, but it was a story that was said to have kind of inspired Melville to write Moby Dick, and that was in the heart of the sea. I think that's what it's called.
Yes, right.
And this one, it's about the, I forget what's it called. It's about
the United States Exploring Expedition.
That's right. The XX is what they called. And again, it is a true story. And if you're interested in reading about the sea, anything that has to do with the sea or with exploration, I think that you probably would like it. Yeah.
And some fascinating personalities there.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's my two cents worth.
Well,
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, we appreciate that. If other people have suggestions, things that they have read recently they thought that were particularly good, they certainly are welcome to give us a call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, we got people jazzed here. I have another caller, someone in Champaign. Let's talk with them on line one. Hello.
Hi. I wanted to bring up two sets of two authors that I thought would fit in with this. The first is a woman, Mary Doria Russell.
Oh, incredible. The Sparrow?
The Sparrow,
yeah.
And The Children of God.
Children of God. She's got a new one.
Yeah.
Which I haven't read.
I haven't read the new one. I read The Sparrow and Children of God, and I thought it fit in with some of the earlier science fiction material. And given, I mean, she has a background in, I think, anthropology and, what's it called? Xenobiology? I don't know
I think she has a degree in anthropology, from what I remember of her. And I think religious studies, too, of some sort. Or
yeah.
She went here, didn't she?
Yes, she did. She went here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's called Paleoanthropologist, is what they say her So I thought that would be of interest. And also, since you mentioned the Pullman work, there's someone who's written an interesting study on the Pullman work. His name is David Loy, which is, it's not fiction, it's nonfiction, but it's a interesting take on Pullman and on Lord of the Rings and on some of Ursula Le Guin's material. It's and it looks at it from a Asian and Buddhist point of view. And let me see what the title is.
Interesting.
It's called The Dharma of Dragons, Dragons, Demons, and Something Else. I don't remember. But what's and he will actually be here in the spring giving a lecture at the university in April. I don't know that. I think it's April 4th or 5th. So
it's called, the book is The Dharma of Dragons and Demons, Buddhist Themes and Modern Fantasy.
Oh,
okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
By David Loy, and that's spelled L-O-Y.
L-O-Y. And actually, I think he might be a guest speaker on Focus 580 in the spring.
Sounds like the kind of thing we'd be interested in if we could do it. See, the host is always the last to know. I may be able to tell you what I'm doing tomorrow. Later on, I have no idea.
He's giving a lecture. It's called, I think it's the Thulin Lecture. It's T-H-U-L-I-N at the university in April.
Very good. Well, okay. He may well show up on Focus 580. Well, thanks for the suggestions.
Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
We appreciate it. We're coming close to the end of this hour. Philip, I know he was prepared. He's been prepared for about the last
half hour. This is good. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different books that we normally wouldn't recommend.
The more diverse, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Tanya and I actually have gotten excited about this one particular author who is getting more well-known. He's got a number of books out. His name is Percival Everett. And I read a novel of his called Glyph, and I bumped into
him. Then he came into the bookstore and accosted me about it.
You got to read Percival Everett. And then, you know, we do that often. If we bump into each other in the bookstore where Tanya works, we just go right into, what have you read lately, da-da-da-da, and so forth, because we're always thinking about the show. Percival Everett writes many, many different kinds of books. And this one book, Glyph, G-L-Y-P-H, is about a baby named Ralph who has an IQ of 400. He's a baby genius. And he doesn't feel particularly impressed with his abilities. He really wants to learn how to drive a car, but he can't do that. So in the absence of that, he spends most of his days reading a lot of literary criticism and a lot of philosophy, all of which he thinks is a bunch of garbage. He thinks it's really bad. And some of the funniest parts in this book, when he's not being kidnapped by the CIA or by child researchers and so forth, because everybody has a nefarious reason to get a hold of him, he's deconstructing the deconstructionists. And he's doing all sorts of things, and he knows everything. And one of the things I really like about this book is that Baby Ralph has imaginary conversations between some of the writers that he's read. And there's one in which Socrates has a discussion about the nature of writing a novel with James Baldwin, and another one in which Roland Barthes discusses writing implements with Zora Neale Hurston. And I'll read just one, and then we'll come back, okay?
Okay, sure.
And this is Roland Barthes. Roland Barthes, by the way, is a character in this book. He enters into it every once in a while, and he always has to say, did I mention that I'm French, you know? First of all, Everett really is grinding a lot of axes in this book. But anyway, here's the conversation between Roland Barthes and Zora Neale Hurston. Barthes, do you remember when those felt-tip pens first showed up on the shelves? I couldn't wait to get home and try it out. They're made by the Japanese as well, and if they'll use them to write. Hurston, I was dead by then, but also, who cares? Barthes, but don't you see? I'm talking about the action of writing. The gesture itself defines so much of the meaning, don't you think? I mean, even where I sit while I'm engaged in writing shapes my import. Hurston, what have you been smoking? Barthes, I have even observed what I call a Bic style of writing. You've seen it, those people who just churn out words endlessly. Hurston nodding, I do believe I have seen it. Barthes, I finally discarded the felt tip because the tip flattened out so soon. I'm back now, too, and I think I'll stay with truly fine fountain pens. They're essential for the kind of smooth writing I require. What do you use? Hurston, a sharpened bone and blood.
Right on. That's hilarious.
Kicks his butt. Go on. You know? Yeah, I love that.
That's all great. Right.
Well, we'll get back to this book after.
We can get back. Yeah. And Philip and Tanya will be staying, and they'll be here for the second hour, and we'll have the opportunity. They will have the opportunity to recommend some more books. Before, though, we take a break for the market update, we need to move some more books, ladies and gentlemen. We have them. They're good. We want you to have them. Oh, we're asking just a little money. In return, a contribution to WILL. You can call us during the break. Now, I'm sure that you didn't want to call during the show because you were listening to Philip and Tanya, but now this is your opportunity to call. We'll take a minute or two, and it'll be great for us. And you will have our thanks, and we'll put a book in your hands. It's great. Jack Brighton is here with me, too.
Yeah, and basically what David is saying, we have two problems right now. We have too many books. We have to get rid of some books. Okay, that's one. Number two, we need to raise some money. So we figured, well, what the heck? You know, let's put the two problems together and come up with a solution. So the solution is for you to call right now, 217-244-9455. Make a pledge at the basic membership level of $40, more if you can afford it. If it's, you know, within your means, certainly we won't say no. And we will send you a book, either a fiction or a nonfiction book. These are hardcover books from the Focus 580 Library. The publishers ship them our way, hoping we'll interview the authors, and certainly we do a lot of that. So, but we have all these extra books, and we're going to put them in your hands with a phone call, 217-244-9455. Let's check in quickly with Kimberly Cronick in our Pledge Center. I know we've had some calls, and we hope to get 40 before noon.
Okay, well, we have four more people to thank who called in and became a member of WIL, and also will be receiving a hardcover book. We want to thank Ruth in Urbana, Alma in Urbana, and Nancy from Charleston. Nancy is a new member, a new friend of WILL, and thank you so much. We're trying to have 300 new friends by the end of this drive. We're up to about 125, and we need 30-some more calls before noon. I know we can do that because books are a great thing. Like radio, books leaves it to your imagination. You paint the pictures. It's part of what WIL does to enrich your life, to nurture your curiosity, your intellect, to lift your spirits, to present a diversity of opinions. That's all valuable. So give us a call, 217-244-9455. Remember, just a $40 pledge gets you a choice of a hardcover fiction or nonfiction book. You might be at your computer right now listening. You can pledge online, WILL.UIUC.edu. And remember, we take your Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. So we make it easy for you. All you have to do is go to the phone and call 217-244-9455.
Today's broadcast made possible in part by a grant from Strawberry Fields in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields Catering Department now offers boxed lunches for professional meetings or casual lunchtime gatherings. Strawberry Fields, 328-1655. Also, the broadcast made possible by a grant from Horeen's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horeen's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. We're going to break for an update on the markets, so stay tuned.
Agricultural information is made possible with